Hello, I'm here during the lunch rush with Janice, who owns her own food truck.
Best cheesesteaks in town.
Janice traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for her food truck business. We're here where she needs us most.
They sure are.
We make it so easy for her to save, with customised coverage that grows with her business. Sorry, I just get so emotional talking about saving folks money.
Not this onion I'm chopping?
It's just so beautiful. Oh, yeah, nice, the onion.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at Geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at Lowe's.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
Hey, I'm Steph, and this is Not Today. Hello and welcome, or welcome back. You may have figured out that I am by myself today because as I am recording literally right now, Alex is in the Colosseum in Rome, so he's just a little bit busy and he can't be here today, which is totally fine, even though there is a little bit of FOMO going on my end. But even still, I am always happy to be here talking to you and telling you an absolutely terrifying story like the one I have for you today. And I think I can confidently say that the scenario in this story is my worst nightmare. And I know I've probably said that a lot on this podcast, but I truly think I mean it this time because the woman we're talking about today was buried alive. And yes, terrifying situation. I think that's something that literally everyone can agree is one of the worst things that can happen to a person and should obviously never happen. And come to think of it, back long ago in like the 18th century, safety coffins were invented to prevent exactly this. It was a coffin that was fitted with a pulley mechanism to prevent a premature burial or allow an occupant to signal that they had been buried alive. They would basically attach a bell to a string, and if you woke up alive in your coffin, you could ring the bell, someone would hear it, and then they would dig you out. At least that was the idea. So the fear of being buried alive has always been around, and believe me, it still lives on today. Because if I woke up in a coffin underground, I think I would spontaneously die from fear and panic, safety bell or not. So what's terrifying about this story is that, as we could have guessed, Michalina Lewandowska was buried alive intentionally with the hope that she would die down there. Thankfully, that did not happen, and she was an absolute badass who freed herself from her own grave in one of the most amazing ways I have ever heard. So with all of that said, why don't we just jump in and get talking about it? It was shortly before midnight on Saturday, May 28th, 2011, and Dan Broccoli was driving along Woodside Road near Woodsum Hall Golf Club in Huddersfield, England, when all of a sudden a woman stumbled out of the tree line and into the road. Dan slammed his foot on the brakes and brought his car to a screeching halt before she ran to his passenger side door and pleaded with him to let her in. She was visibly distressed and disheveled, but Dan opened the door for her. She told Dan her name was Michalina, and someone had tried to kill her. Michalina Lewandowska was born in 1984 in a village in the south of Poland to Mirosława and Jan Lewandowska. She was one of three daughters, and she was often described as beautiful. And she was. She was very conventionally attractive. She was young, blonde, thin, and had a nice smile. When Michalina was 21 years old, she was in a coffee shop in Lasocine close to her family home when she first met 19-year-old Marcin Kasperzak. Marcin Kasperzak was born in 1986 in Poland, and when the two met eyes for the first time in that coffee shop, their connection was instant. It was your classic meet-cute. And very shortly after that, they were in a relationship. Michalina's family was less than thrilled with their daughter's new relationship. Her father, Jan, said Marcin was trouble from the moment he met him. Jan really didn't like her daughter's boyfriend, and he has some pretty brutal quotes out there about Marcian, which are completely justified, but also just kind of funny. He said, quote, "I always knew something wasn't right about Marcian, right from the start. He didn't make eye contact. He was spoiled and overprotected, maybe because he was an only child and a mommy's boy. His mother kept him cooped up in a cage like a chicken all his life, so when he went out into the world, he didn't really know what to do." Despite Michelina's family's clear dislike for her new boyfriend, she really loved him. And after only a year of dating, Marcian asked Michelina to marry him, and she of course said yes. She was so excited to be marrying the man she loved. And from there, the couple moved from Poland to the UK in 2006 to be closer to Marcian's family, which Michelina was fine with, but again, her family was less than thrilled. But at the same time, they also knew that Michelina's happiness was really the most important thing, so even though they weren't happy about it, they did support her, which really does show how much they love their daughter. Even though they really don't like this guy, and she's moving out of the country for him, they still support her. But also, it probably had something to do with the fact that they knew if they didn't support her, that would just push her further away, because she was clearly making this decision, and they didn't want to lose her entirely. So it was a mixed bag, I'm sure. The two moved to Marcian's parents' home in Huddersfield in northern England, and Marcian began working in a meat factory as a meat packer, and Michelina ran a small business from home mending clothes. 2 years after moving to the UK, the couple had their son, Jakob Kasperzak, in April of 2008. And by that time, their relationship had definitely experienced its ups and downs. But after their son was born, their relationship really began to deteriorate. They were both young. Michelina was in her early 20s, and being a new parent is a very difficult thing and can put a massive strain on any couple. So shortly after Jakob was born, the two broke off their engagement. But over the next 3 years, they would get back together and break up and rinse and repeat. They were very on and off again. Which made sense because the entire time they were broken up, they still lived in the same house. Michelina still lived with Marcian's parents and him and their son. So, of course, there's going to be ebbs and flows in the relationship. And I can imagine that was probably difficult, but at the same time, they had just had a baby. So it was, I'm sure, the best thing for him, considering there were so many people around to care for him. And it's also incredibly possible that Michelina didn't have the money to move out. So it just made sense for a lot of reasons. And it seemed like Michelina really wanted her and Marcian's relationship to work. She even continued to wear her engagement ring after they broke up, since she was holding out hope that they could work things out. But it was around this time that Marcian began spending a lot more time at his local gym, and he had decided that he wanted to become an amateur bodybuilder. And you know, I didn't anticipate multiple episodes recently to be involving bodybuilders, but here we are. And as we know, their track record, at least on our podcast, is not great. Marcian was obsessed with working out. He was in the gym minimum 5 times a week, but more like 7, and he had begun taking steroids. Anabolic steroids are a group of synthetic drugs. They copy the masculinizing effects of the male sex hormone testosterone, and they're often referred to as performance and image-enhancing drugs. Their use includes increasing sporting performance and outcomes, but the misuse of anabolic steroids can cause long-term negative side effects. These can include cardiovascular complications, liver disease, reproductive organ damage, and severe mood swings. Case reports and small studies indicate that anabolic steroids increase irritability and aggression, and people who misuse anabolic steroids report more anger than non-users, as well as more fights, verbal aggression, and violence toward their significant others, sometimes called roid rage, which I'm sure we have all heard of. Anabolic steroids can cause acne, premature balding, stunted growth, impotence, shrinkage of genitals, high blood pressure, nerve damage, difficulty sleeping, irritability, depression, paranoia, and the list goes on. And it can cause severe, long-lasting, and in some cases, irreversible damage. They can lead to early heart attacks, strokes, liver tumors, kidney failure, and psychiatric problems. But hey, it makes you look hot, so it's all worth it in the end, right guys? Let's go pump some iron. But for real, this was the perfect storm because there was a lot of tension at home, possibly feelings of suffocation, there was a new child in the house, and with the added aggression from this steroid use and whatever other symptoms he was experiencing as well, it was a really bad environment for both Michelina and Jakob because, I mean, the constant fighting and aggression and violence is bad for everyone. While Marcian was gone at the gym all week, Michelina was at home with her son and her in-laws. And if Michelina wasn't around to take care of Jakob, like if she was working, her mother-in-law would watch him, because Marcian was not around very much at all to watch Jakob. And as anyone could expect, there was a lot of arguing. Michelina would call Marcian out for never being around and spending all of his time and money on bodybuilding, and Marcian would mock Michelina for being boring. She was now boring, according to him. Which, I'm sorry, Marcian, what did you expect having a newborn? Did you expect her to be going out to the clubs and hanging out with you at the gym and being very, very active and having a flourishing social life right after giving birth and having a baby to take care of? Like, he's clearly very immature and it shows. And I'm not saying that stuff is completely impossible, but, you know, speaking from someone who does not have a child but can only imagine what it would be like, I'm sure there isn't a lot of room for a lot of partying right in the beginning at least. It just pissed me off. And it pissed Michelina off because she's like, what in the actual world are you talking about? And if that wasn't ridiculous enough, Marcian also started comparing Michelina to the girls in his gym. As if we couldn't tell that that was the next thing that was going to happen in his stupid little pea brain. He was telling her that they were more attractive than she was. He also changed his Facebook relationship status to single in hopes that he would start a relationship with a new woman. And this story is taking place in the early 2000s to 2011 time period. So, as we all know, Facebook relationship status meant a lot. So the fact that he is single would have been really hurtful. And it was. The fights were only made worse by Marcian's steroid use because they would often end in violent outbursts. And from what I've found about the situation, it sounds like he never physically hit her during these fights, but things would be thrown and a scene would be caused, and there was a lot of intimidation, at the very least, which is still abusive. Jan, Michelina's father, said the conflict between them got worse and worse, but there was no evidence. Either his muscle-building steroids messed with his brain or he went crazy for some reason. And yeah, could not agree more, Jan. He keeps spitting truth. He knows exactly what's up. By 2011, Michelina and Marcian's relationship was the worst it had ever been. Tensions were high, and both of them were pretty much at the point of no return as far as their relationship went. Michelina wanted to move back to Poland with her son, and Marcian did want Michelina out of the picture, but he wanted his mother to raise their son. He didn't want to raise him, he wanted his mother to. Which again, is wild. But he didn't really have to. He was living at home with his parents, who were regularly taking care of Jakob as it was, and, as far as I know, weren't necessarily telling him he had to be around and stop bodybuilding, so he could have had that. But at the time, Michelina and Marcian were in one of their off-again periods, and Michelina had told him about her desire to move back to Poland. But despite everything, Michelina did still love and care about Marcian, and she still wore her engagement ring kind of as a sign of hope that even then, with the true end of their relationship looming, she hoped things could be worked out. But things were definitely at their breaking point, and the two were barely even on speaking terms. She wanted to go home, and she wanted her parents to meet baby Jakob because I believe they still hadn't at this point. Marcian definitely wanted Michelina gone, but he wasn't loving her idea. He wanted a more permanent solution, and he wanted to keep Jakob with him. And so that leads us to May 28th, 2011. The day started out completely normal, but Michelina got a text from Marcian that said he wanted to take her shopping. He was sorry, he'd been a jerk, and he wanted to make it up to her. This was a very surprising text to Michelina. Marcian never wanted to spend time with her anymore, but she was happy to get that text. She was still kind of hoping that things would be worked out, and this seemed like a really nice start. And that detail made me really sad because I can only imagine she had been waiting for him to say something like this, to be like, I'm sorry, let's go shopping and let's figure things out. And she finally got that text. So seeing it, she's so excited. She goes and gets ready and puts her makeup on, and she's expecting to have a really good day and hoping that this is the beginning of their new future. She had absolutely no reason to think that they would be doing anything other than shopping that day. And yeah, there had been so many conflicts between them, some of which were violent, but she didn't think she should be fearful going into their shopping date. She even put on her engagement ring once again to have some hope. And she was really looking forward to it. She handed over Jakob to her mother-in-law and began getting ready to go out. Unfortunately, Marcian was not planning on taking Michelina shopping. While she was getting ready to go out, Marcian had invited a friend over, 17-year-old Patrick Boris. Marcian at the time was 25, so it wouldn't necessarily be weird if he was hanging out with his little brother, but I don't know how he found a 17-year-old friend and was hanging out with him normally. Like, that's very strange to me. It is possible they met from the gym, but in reality, I don't know how they met or became friends. It's just kind of weird. Patrick was also a Polish immigrant, and when Michelina saw that he was in their home, she thought it was a little weird, but she didn't have much time to really think about it. So when she emerged from the bathroom, she found Marcian with a strange smile on his face, and he told her to come here because he had something he wanted to show her. Marcian revealed that he was holding a 300,000-volt stun gun and told her he wanted to show her how it worked. Michelina initially believed they were playing a joke on her, but unfortunately, they were not. She tried to push Marcian away as he was brandishing this stun gun, but he managed to get Michelina in the neck with it. Before now, I did not know much about stun guns, so I looked into it a little bit, and stun guns and tasers are actually different, but both are considered less lethal weapons that use electricity to incapacitate a person, but they're used a little bit differently. Stun guns are used in close proximity and require you to be next to the person that's attacking you, or in Marcian's case, that you are attacking. But a stun gun is a handheld device that has two prongs that do not detach from itself. Tasers use projectile prongs that attach to a target further away, up to 15 feet. So honestly, I didn't know the difference between the two of them. I would have assumed that a stun gun was, you know, the thing that you shoot out and it attaches to someone and then they get stunned or, you know, tased, I guess. But no, it's the other way around, which I found interesting. And from what I've seen, stun guns are illegal to possess in the UK and have been since the Firearms Act classified them as weapons that discharge a harmful electric charge. So this applies both to public and private places, including your own home. Penalties for possessing a stun gun include up to 10 years imprisonment and a fine. The average voltage of a stun gun is 25,000 volts, which is the minimum voltage for most stun guns. The average range of voltage is usually 25,000 to around 150,000. So if we're talking about the one Marcian was using, that's double that of the maximum of the average voltage. And it's only ever recommended that you up the voltage on a stun gun if you're trying to circumvent thick clothing, but even then, it's not recommended to go above 50,000 volts. And most police stun guns are 50,000 volts. Which is, again, so crazy to me that he was working with a 300,000-volt stun gun and police don't even use the 150 or even 100,000 volts. Being hit with a 25,000-volt stun gun can cause confusion, disorientation, and can prevent someone from moving or thinking clearly. A 50,000-volt stun gun has enough power to seize up the whole body and cause a lot of pain, at the very least. If the stun gun voltage is set too high, it can actually cause brain injury, loss of consciousness, abnormal brain function, and seizures. So after being hit in the neck with a 300,000-volt stun gun, Michelina went down like a ton of bricks. And honestly, it's even surprising she survived that shock to her system because it was so much electricity. Not only was she not a big person, but she was actually quite thin. So while she was on the ground, Marcian then used the stun gun again on her neck, which was completely unnecessary and violent, which he's no stranger to, but that kind of voltage could probably take down an elephant. So for a person Michelina's size, there was absolutely no need for that. That was just senseless cruelty. And he then took a knee and pressed it into her ribs to keep her down. Marcian then used packing tape to tape her mouth shut and taped her arms and legs together with the help of Patrick. Again, which was so unnecessary, she wasn't going to be moving anytime soon, and Marcian was so much bigger than her, so he definitely didn't need 17-year-old Patrick, but he was there regardless. And as if this wasn't scary enough, while he was doing this, Marcian was screaming at Michelina. He apparently went on a rant about how much he hated her and that it would be better if she went away and left their son with him and his mother and she would never see them again. This was an absolute nightmare. This was the man that she loved and desperately wanted to work things out with, who only a few minutes prior she was excited to spend the day with, and he betrayed her in such a horrifying and terrible way. The fact that he not only wanted her out of the picture, but would go so far as to hurt her that badly and fully end her life was a terrifying realization for her. After the initial attack, Marcian and Patrick left Michelina lying in the hallway for 6 hours. Things had kind of calmed down for a moment, although the entire time Michelina's mind was racing. In the beginning, she thought that maybe this attack had been some kind of cruel joke, but as she lay there, she realized what their true intentions were, and she was terrified for her life. Marcian offered Michelina something to eat and drink, and then offered to help her use the bathroom, and while that was happening, Patrick was on the computer playing video games, as if nothing was happening. How does a 17-year-old get wrapped up in something like this? A 25-year-old approaches you, a junior or senior in high school, depending on your birthday, and says, "Hey, I want to kill my ex-girlfriend. Thoughts?" And they're like, "Yeah, as long as I can play some video games, I don't really care." It just seems he was so nonchalant with everything. I just wonder how that really came about, because it is mind-boggling to me. During this period of relative calmness, Michelina's restraints had been loosening, and unfortunately for her, Marcian did notice that and redid her binds and made them tight again. So that little sliver of hope that she would be able to figure this out then vanished. They were also just sitting there with her, lying in the hallway, so there wasn't really anything she could do, but still. Once night fell, Marcian forced Michelina into a cardboard PC box. Michelina tried screaming through her taped mouth, but Marcian just laughed and told her calmly, "I've hated you for 4 years. You'll never see your son again." Michelina later said of that moment that she would never forget Marcian's face when he said that. He was incredibly calm, which was even more worrying to her. And again, I cannot even imagine having the person that you love say something like that to you and mean it. I mean, even joking about it is like not great, but regardless of the conflict they had going on, she still wanted to work things out, so she wasn't necessarily fearful of him. Now she was, of course, but the emotional slap in the face and betrayal is unimaginable. They then taped the box shut and loaded Michelina into the trunk of Marcian's green Vauxhall Astra. The three then drove to a remote wooded area outside of Huddersfield and down a narrow road surrounded by woods, which bordered a private property. And their car was actually captured on CCTV cameras during this drive, so you can see the car that has Michelina in a box in the trunk on camera. They then unloaded the box with Michelina inside into the woods. The two of them dug a shallow grave, placed the cardboard box inside with her head pointing down. They filled the hole and then placed an 88-pound tree branch on top for good measure. They were really trying to make sure she didn't get out. And Michelina was conscious during this entire nightmare. As they piled dirt on top of the box, she could hear it. She said, "I could feel the box was becoming smaller and smaller." She strained to listen to what they were saying as she thought to herself that she was going to die. And soon enough, she had been buried alive. And she only had so much air inside that box. As she lay there, cramping up in a contorted position in the box, she began to panic. But she quickly realized that she needed to calm down if she wanted to live, so she breathed as shallowly as possible to keep what little air she had left. Happy with their work, Marcian and Patrick went to a nearby ATM with Michelina's bank cards and took out £500 and then drove home to play video games. No, I'm not kidding. I cannot believe that is what happened. Some sources say that the £500 was to pay Patrick, but that wasn't fully confirmed, so it's a little bit unclear. I sure hope that he got something out of that deal, and he wasn't just a complete psychopath who agreed to help his new 25-year-old friend murder his partner for nothing. But also, £500 is not a lot of money, and believe me, I'm not laughing because I think it's funny. I mean, it is a little funny that that's what they agreed on, but it's more so just uncomfortable laughter. But still, I mean, £500 to a 17-year-old, I guess, is a lot of money. But like, in the grand scheme of things, that's absolutely ridiculous that that's the price of murder to him. And then they just went home as if nothing had happened and they played video games. Meanwhile, Michelina is laying in the box and she knew that there were two small handholes on either side. So she poked her two fingers through and she felt that there was soil outside, of course. But Michelina wasn't going down without a fight. So laying in her shallow grave, she waited 30 whole minutes after the guys left, just listening to make sure that they were gone, because she knew that if she managed to escape or they saw any sign of her trying to escape, they would surely kill her. So she tried to listen for the car driving away, but she hadn't been able to hear it, so she had no idea if they were actually gone or not. But after 30 minutes, she knew she had to do something, otherwise she would die down there. She said, quote, "During my time inside my shallow grave where I was buried alive, I feared that my life was at an end and I was going to die. I prayed to God to help me survive so that I could look after my young son. The thought of my son gave me the strength to fight my way out of the box and save myself." And if that isn't a mother's love, I don't know what is. But it's true. I mean, she wasn't just living for herself anymore. She was living for Jakob, and he was her main motivator of getting out of there because she wanted to see him again and she wanted to be there to be his mother and live. She needed to figure out what to do next. But remember, her legs, hands, and mouth were all taped up, and she was taped inside a box that was being weighed down by a huge tree branch, and she was upside down. So she had to kind of wiggle herself to be right side up, and she tried kicking the box with her legs, but it wasn't budging. The pressure on the box was too heavy, but she realized that her hand could fit through these handholes on either side of the box, which was when she thought about her engagement ring. She was wearing her ring that her fuckhead of an ex gave her. And what's so crazy about this is that it was still a symbol of hope. But instead of being a hope for their relationship to be mended, it was now a symbol of hope that she could use it to free herself and save her own life. And I will say her engagement ring was very pretty. It was a simple gold band with a center stone and one on either side. So three stones in total, all were round, just in case anyone out there is into engagement rings like I am recently. But now she was going to use it. So once she felt like the coast was clear, with her arms still bound, she managed to take off her ring, and she shimmied her way into a fetal position and started using the ring to cut and scratch at the tape that was binding her legs. She said, "It was not easy, as I was tied up. The only thing I could move was my head, which was also tied up with tape." She successfully did cut the tape on her legs, and with her legs now free, she put the ring back on her finger and forced her hand through one of the side grip holes. She used her engagement ring to slash and cut at the cardboard and make the hole bigger. But with each cut that made the hole bigger, soil started falling into the box. It covered her clothes, her hair, and her face, and she was terrified, but she had to keep going. She began punching and clawing at this hole and the walls of the cardboard box, ring first, and ripped the side of the cardboard box apart. After creating a hole big enough to fit her head, she stuck her head out from the dirt and began screaming for help. But no one came. She was exhausted, and it was really dark. but she could at the very least see the trees now. She looked around and realized that she was in the middle of nowhere, so getting her head out of the hole wasn't going to cut it. She could, however, hear the muffled sound of music from a nearby pub, so she knew she must not be too far from civilization. So she ripped and kicked at the box until she managed to get her arms out to the surface, which was the turning point for her. Once her arms were out, she was able to push her entire body up and out from the dirt. After an hour of being buried alive, Michelina had broken free of her cardboard coffin and stood, exhausted but triumphant. That is like a scene from out of a movie. And everything about that is impressive. The most impressive thing to me is that she didn't panic, and she stayed focused, and she did exactly what needed to be done. And honestly, it was a short amount of time. An hour is a long time, but she spent 30 minutes of that hour listening to make sure that Marcian and Patrick were gone. So it was really only a half an hour of her kicking and scratching at this box with her ring, which is definitely a long time, and I'm sure it felt like forever, but it's just incredible to me. Also, the fact that she even thought to use her ring as like a weapon, essentially, or a tool to get herself out is so badass. And the whole shifting of the ring being a symbol for their relationship to now being a symbol for her living her life and continuing to live is so amazing to me. Because I know that she probably looked down at that ring so many times and just wished that she could work things out with him. And she thought about Marcian and she thought about her future and her son. And all of that is very valid wants for a person. But now it was not about Marcian at all. It was about her and it was about her son and surviving. And I just think that's really cool. Also, give that ringmaker a raise, because that thing stayed beautiful even after she used it to fight her way out from her untimely death. Michelina really said, not today. So after getting out of her shallow grave, she ran to the nearest road and flagged down a passing car, which we talked about briefly in the beginning, was Dan Broccoli's car. So he immediately stopped and let her into the car. He called authorities and drove her to the police station. Michelina recounted her entire day, her attack, and her escape to Detective Chief Inspector Lisa Griffin. Michelina told her about her on and off again relationship, her ex-fiance asking her to go shopping, and then using a stun gun on her, putting her in a box, and burying her in the woods. She said, "For many years, I loved Marcy and Casper Zach very much. But after this horrific attack upon me, my feelings toward him have turned to hatred." And rightfully so. She begged Detective Griffin to get her son and return him to her because she was terrified about him being left with her homicidal ex-fiancé. The police went to the scene of the crime, and one of the officers there, Carl Ackroyd, took video of the scene, which was later used in court, showing the grave, the box, which was now in pieces, the leaves and the sticks used to cover it, and the massive branch. The box had been placed in a natural depression in the ground that the guys had dug out a little more, so they didn't even really dig out a proper hole. And thank God they didn't, but they were pretty dumb. The grave was 33 meters from the road, and as they investigated the scene, they found a few pieces of clothing trailing from the hole that were Michelina's that she had shed as she got out of the box. It's possible it was like restricting her from getting out, like a bulky sweater or, you know, there was dirt on it or something, but either way, there was a couple pieces of clothes that were left behind at the grave. Ackroyd later said in court, quote, "It's not a 6-foot deep hole, but it is an attempt to conceal." Meaning there was no doubt about the fact that they were trying to bury her and hide the box. They just weren't very good at it. The police then raided Michelina and Marcian's home, where they found Marcian and Patrick probably still playing video games and arrested them both. Tweedledee and Tweedledum. Once arrested, Marcian was very quick to deny kidnapping and attempting to murder Michelina. His explanation was that it was just a prank. He was just trying to scare her and was planning to go back and dig her out after she had learned a lesson. And I do wonder, what lesson was that? What could someone possibly learn from being buried alive and left alone for any period of time? I mean, it was bullshit, and we know that, but just What a stupid explanation. He did confess to taking her credit card and withdrawing £500, which he said was used to pay Patrick. So Marcian was charged with kidnapping and attempted murder, and on top of that, as if this wasn't all enough, while police searched Marcian's home and belongings, they found large quantities of makeshift explosives. So it wasn't like full-on sticks of dynamite, but it was like the components of making massive bombs. So it makes you wonder, was that his backup plan? Was he going to literally blow up like his home with Michelina inside or something? Like, why on earth would someone have loads of explosives? I mean, he's clearly an unwell, unhinged man. So who actually knows what that would have been for? But it's a terrifying thing to find. Thankfully for the police, it did mean that he was able to be charged with more crimes and therefore leading to more time in jail / prison. So it was good for something, at least in this case. Detective Griffin commended Michelina's bravery, saying she undoubtedly saved her own life by freeing herself from the box Casper Zack had buried her in. Casper Zack has shown himself to be an unpleasant intimidator of vulnerable women, and I am pleased that he is now behind bars where he belongs. The trial began in November of the same year, and the prosecuting officer in the case was a man named Jonathan Sharp, and presiding judge was Judge Peter Collier. Julian Goose, who was now Marcian's defense attorney, suggested to Michelina that his client had only ever intended to scare her and that the box she was put in had two handholds through which she could breathe. And Michelina could not even believe that they were insinuating that those handholds were left intentionally for her to continue living in the box underground. She said, "I can tell you now that they were not left specially or intentionally for me to live." Prosecutors told the jury, quote, "In a nutshell, this case is about a young man who got bored with his partner, the mother of his child, and decided to get rid of her. He laid out everything. Marcian had gotten bored of Michelina and wanted to date women from the gym. He began hating Michelina, but didn't want to lose his son and wanted his mother to raise him. Instead of an amicable split and potentially having to pay child support, Marcian made the decision to kill Michelina in one of the most horrifying ways imaginable." Jan, Michelina's father, said, quote, "I now believe his motivation was greed. Greed to take Jakob away from Michelina and to give Jakob to his own mother. It is pretty sick when you think about it." And I couldn't agree more, Jan. It is very sick when you think about it. No healthy person would come to this conclusion. And I do wonder how big of a role the steroids played, because I didn't even really know that steroids could cause psychiatric problems. Like, it can cause paranoia and depression and mental health issues. So on top of him being probably a very unwell person, he then started taking steroids, which I'm sure just made him more unhinged and unwell. So it was, again, just a terrible combination of things and the perfect storm. And yes, very easily I can agree that he is a pretty sick person. Judge Peter Collier said during sentencing, quote, "It was your intention that she would not be found. It was your intention that she die there. The death you intended would have been long and slow. It is mind-numbingly awful to imagine the sort of death you intended her to die. I must have regard in the uniquely chilling nature in this case. As I have already observed, being buried alive must be one of the most dreadful ways to die that anyone can imagine." And I just love when judges call it out like that, when they're like, "You're crazy, and this is one of the worst ways you could have done this, so you're getting the worst sentencing possible." The trial ended on January 13th, 2012, and the jury deliberated for 8 hours, which is kind of shocking. I really wonder why it took that long, but then I realized that they did vote guilty by an 11-1 majority. So it wasn't unanimous. So in my mind, 11 of these jurors is sitting in this room with this one other person who is saying, "You know, I don't know that he did it." And they're all probably banging their heads against the table, just being like, "Please, for the love of God, stop. How can you see anything other than what it is? There is so much evidence. The woman who was buried alive is still alive and is telling you exactly what happened. And Marcian did admit to burying her alive. He didn't admit to attempting to murder her. He, like I said, was claiming that he was going to get her after she learned her lesson or whatever. but he did admit to the attack and kidnap and, you know, burying her. So it's pretty clear cut to me. I don't know how any person on God's green earth could come to the conclusion that he was not guilty. Thankfully, he was still found guilty because everyone else was like, yeah, obviously he's to blame and he should get a lot of jail time for this. So he was still found guilty, but that just was unbelievable to me that even one person said no. Marcian Kasperzak was found guilty of attempted murder and had pleaded guilty to kidnap and was sentenced to 20 years in prison. And he also pleaded guilty to possession of a prohibited weapon and was sentenced to an additional 8 four-year sentences, which he would have to serve concurrently, which came to a total of 32 years. And he did get the possibility of parole. And yes, 32 years is a long time, but he was charged with attempted murder, which gets a lesser sentence. And that has always been so confusing to me because the only difference between attempted murder and murder is success. His intention was to kill her, but she managed to save her own life, and somehow he is the one who's getting rewarded for that? It makes no sense. If a person commits first-degree murder, which is what this would have been had she died, then he easily could have gotten life in prison. And I think the minimum for first-degree murder is 25 years, which is already more than what he got for attempted murder. He got 20 years for that. And then the explosives got him the extra time. Again, it's just so crazy to me that attempted murder is such a lesser sentence because the only reason he got attempted murder and not murder is because Michelina is an absolute badass who saved her own life. Why does he make out in that deal? Unreal. Michelina said, quote, "He buried me alive and walked away thinking I would die there, cold and alone in that terrible box. He wished for my death and planned to kill me in the most horrifying way imaginable, but I didn't allow him to succeed. Using the last shreds of my strength, I fought my way out of that grave. Now it is he who is imprisoned." Boris was not convicted of attempted murder, but he was convicted of kidnapping and was sentenced to 4.5 years in a young offenders institute. So he just got a couple years in juvie, essentially. After the trial, Judge Collier said, quote, "The problem we faced was that she would not go willingly and leave your child with you and your mother. So it was then you formed a plan to get rid of her. Fortunately, she escaped. Her raw determination to survive for the sake of your son is undoubtedly what saved her." Michelina's mother, Miroslava, stated, "I am so happy by the verdict because for me, it means peace at last. I was waking up at night having nightmares where I saw Marcian's face. He was haunting me like a ghost." And that is Michelina's mother. So you can only imagine what Michelina's going through, and it definitely did affect her. She said, quote, "The big question for me is how long he'll be jailed for, because I won't feel safe if he's free. I still have nightmares that Marcian will come back to find me and kill me. I want him to be locked up in a safe place for as long as possible, just so me and my son can try to have a happy life. My only hope is that he can accept that what he did to me was very wrong. I really hope that no one will ever experience what I went through on that day in May and at the hands of a man whom I loved and trusted." I couldn't find too much about Marcian or Patrick after all of this, but after doing a little math, Patrick is out. He would have been released in 2015 if he wasn't released earlier than that, which, as we know, is highly possible. And I do hope he learned his lesson and turned his life around, but you never really know. So that's just a scary thought, I guess. Marcian will be looking at a release in about 2044, assuming that he doesn't get an early release as well. I haven't found much about Michelina or Jakub since then, but today Michelina would have been about 40 years old and Jakub would be about 16. And one of my sources did say that Michelina and her son were relocated to a secret location following the attempted murder. So I hope that's true, and I don't think it's necessary to share more about them anyway. We just hope that they are somewhere safe and are doing well, because they deserve it. Whew, I feel like I need to shake it off and go stand outside and breathe in some fresh air or something. I hope that man rots. I hope he doesn't get out. And I know at some point he probably will, but he shouldn't. The only reason he's not getting charged for just murder is because Michelina saved her own life. It had nothing to do with him. But anyway, I think that's about all I have to say about this story. We'll just leave off hoping that Michelina and Jakob and her family are doing well. And Jan, because he was really spitting truth throughout this entire story. He was like, yeah, I hate that guy, and he's a freak, and a mommy's boy, and he sucks. And I agree. And that is obviously paraphrasing, but, you know, I think he probably would agree. And I know I touched on it earlier, but the whole engagement ring aspect of this story really resonated with me, because as someone who has recently gotten engaged, your engagement ring is such an exciting thing. And you look at it and it has so many like happy feelings and memories and love attached to it. And so I can only imagine that going through some kind of on and off again relationship with the father of your child and, you know, holding on to that hope and holding on to those memories of love really meant a lot. And so the fact that she used that piece of jewelry to get herself out of her grave is so powerful. I feel like I don't even have the right words to express how I'm feeling about it, but she is just so powerful. She is the only person that she needed, and she proved that to herself. Anyway, point being, she's a very powerful woman and an amazing mother, and I really hope that she's out there living the life that she wants. But yeah, I guess I did have a little more to say, but that's truly all. But anyway, why don't we shake that off and I'll give you a little bit of a palate cleanser so we can go back to our days as normal, and I'll tell you something good. My good thing is that Alex is coming home tomorrow. He's been gone for like 8 days. He's been bopping around Switzerland and the Alps and Rome and a bunch of places. So he's been having a really good time with his friends and I'm so happy for him, but also I'm really happy to have him home. And I am excited to hang out and do some fall things. I want to go to like a cider mill and pick some apples. I'm wearing fuzzy socks for the first time this season. So I'm definitely getting into the fall spirit, and I'm excited to like watch scary movies and smell pumpkin and see the leaves change. So I guess it's a mixed bag of good thing. But anyway, thank you so much for listening. If you would like to check out a bunch of bonus episodes and vote on stories you want to hear, head over to patreon.com/nottodaypodcast. We have new merch with brand new designs that are so fun, and I'll leave the link to the merch store in the episode's description, and you can also find it in our Instagram bio at nottoday_podcast. We post pictures of all the stories we talk about over there. If you or anyone you know has a story of survival that you'd like to share with us and possibly hear on an upcoming listener's episode, send it to notodaypodcast@gmail.com, or a spooky story. It's spooky season, so hey, send me a ghost story. We have a TikTok that is Not Today Podcast and a Twitter that is Not Today Podcast, but the T on that podcast is a 3, because that makes sense. And just keep breathing. Yeah.